This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we talk to the teenage would-be local contestants in the World Championship of what promoters have trademarked as the varsity sport for the mind. So, with no further ado, let's go inside the Compass. The email was direct and to the point. Hi, this is Chance Kane of the First Robotics Competition Team 4918. Right now, our team has just finished up at our regionals championship, and we are four slots away from making it to the World Championships in St. Louis. This means that if only four teams elect not to go to World, we are in the running. However, in order for us to even have a chance at World, we need to pay the entrance fees and get there. I was wondering if it might be possible for KPTZ to help us out and air an interview to raise awareness in our community of this wonderful team of lovable geeks we have and hopefully aid us in our quest to win it all. I phoned the number provided, and a couple of evenings later I walked into the upstairs foyer room that for the past 3 years has been donated by the Northwest Maritime Center for the use of local teenagers and their adult mentors to participate in what the promoters have trademarked as the varsity sport for the mind, and which, according to First Robotics Competition website, has attracted more than 73,000 participants aged 14 to 18 worldwide. I found Kane and a handful of other teenagers and adult mentors gathered around a computer screen where they were reviewing footage of the recent regional championship where the team had raided in the middle of a field of some 65 contestants. Asking who was best qualified to talk about the history of the group, I was directed to Austin Henry, an earnest, round-faced man with dark-framed glasses, who was introduced as the lead mentor.
Well, I guess the long story of it is back in 2012... my younger brother was still a student at Scrim High School, and for the longest time, he couldn't stop raving about this robot club that he was in. And I thought, you know, it's pretty cool. He's probably building something, you know, about the size of your hand. Maybe it has a couple wheels that spin, motors. Because, you know, he and I had done that as kids for quite some time. And then I went and saw one of their competitions, and here I was seeing these washing machine-sized robots driving around playing basketball on a court, and it was absolutely incredible. And that's when I learned more about what the First Robotics Competition was. I mean, I had enjoyed being there so much that I decided I wanted to volunteer. So the following year, I went over to Scrim High School and spent a year as a mentor on that program. That year's game involved a mixture of ultimate frisbee and climbing jungle gyms. These things were going about 9 feet in the air on these giant metal, welded metal pyramids at the end of the match for bonus points. And if they couldn't do that, then they were shooting frisbees at a target the size of a license plate about 60 feet away. All of this, you know, on the clock, a three-on-three match. I mean, it just looked like an exhibition sport. So at the conclusion of that season, I recognized that this is the kind of program that would benefit Port Townsend infinitely. So we had an open house meeting at Blue Heron and at the high school. And that summer, we had about eight to ten kids, come and explore the possibility of starting a robotics team.
So how many teams are there in the area?
Oh, in Washington State and Oregon alone, there are over 150 teams in our district.
And what is your team number?
We are team number 4,918.
And is that some indication of how many teams there are in?
The numbers are assigned sequentially on a global basis based on when teams register. So to kind of give an idea of how quickly the program is expanding, there's the oldest team in Washington is team number 360. And they've been around for close to 15 years, I want to say.
Yeah, about as long as I've been alive. yeah.
So you're 15 years old?
Yep.
Now, were you one of the first kids who came in here?
I was actually one of the one and a half tier. It's not quite second generation, not quite first generation, somewhere in the middle. I kind of joined third of the way through the season because a couple of my friends said, hey, you're smart. You should come down here and help us build this really cool robot. And so I joined.
So how many people are in the team?
So we have 15 students this year. We had about the same number last year. Interestingly enough, most of our team members last year were freshmen, and this year most of them are sophomores. So we're running with about 12 boys and 3 girls. We represent three different area schools and one school out of Polesbo, West Sound Academy. So we have students from JCS, Chemicum High School, and Port Townsend High School as well.
So I gather that not every single member of the team actually shows up to every single meeting because...
Right now, this is actually an hour before our team meeting.
Oh, it is.
Because right now, we have bumped our meetings back a little bit just to account for people having other extracurriculars. Like right now, I actually had soccer practice, and I actually ended up coming in here instead because this is a little bit more important because we are going to the World Championships. Not exactly doing that in soccer right now. No offense to my soccer coach. I love you, Ahmad. Great.
Oh, so this last competition was a step to the World Championships?
The last championship was regionals. And then the top teams that place there then go on to the World Championship. And so what happened was we placed... how did it work?
It was top 31.
Top 31 teams. And so we were 4 below. But then due to other teams just lacking the spirit or the money...
Just the money
in general. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to have a team get invited to go to the World Championship and then not go just because they're too tired. It's a World Championship. You're going to go.
And what does it cost to go to the World Championship?
Austin, is that the same for...
The entrance fee is $5,000.
So for World...
$5,000.
World is $5,000. And then we also have the added cost of getting to St. Louis where the... World Championship is held, and rooming, and food, and generally everything else that teenagers require to, you know, stay alive. So
what sort of special skills does it require to build a robot? Handy with a screwdriver.
Yeah, that is definitely certain. A variety of things. The good thing about this program, though, is that you can walk into the club with absolutely no experience. And everybody, not just our team, everybody in the entire community, they're all so helpful, and you basically accumulate all the skills you could possibly need to be a beneficial asset to the team as you go along. It helps definitely to show up if you already have some. So that is nice. We do have some team members that have a background in mad science, as we jokingly call it.
Mad science.
But, yes.
So what is your background, Austin?
So I work as an engineer out at Atlas Technologies out in Glen Cove. We're a manufacturing company with between 15 and 20 people employed at any given time. And we make vacuum chambers for scientific research and industrial processes. So we specialize in a lot of very high-end, very custom stuff, but my expertise was in 3D design work and CAD modeling, which is a skill that we've put to very high use here with our team, and I've taken great pride in being able to teach several of these kids how to use the same software and tools that we use in industry to design real things.
So what are you designing now?
Over here in our magical closet of wonders, as we like to call it, we have our 6-foot behemoth of a bot.
Does it have a name?
Last year it was Buster. This year we call it Mad Stacks. That is what it does, is it stacks that gets mad. So each year we get a game of sorts, as we call it, for our competition. Mm. And so we have this kickoff day where everybody shows up at 5 in the morning, or departs at 5, and we get there, and there's a bit of hype, and we're sitting there all waiting in the bleachers, and then the music starts, and we all just kind of lose it for a bit, and then we all calm down, and they show us a motivational poster video, just montage in general, and then they hit us with the game, and then they give us a kit of parts and say, "Go, you have 6 weeks."
Oh, so they actually give you parts. There's like certain...
Yes, they give us a small pre-built kit of parts. And this year, the organization actually upgraded our control system. And so they distributed to every team a new control system. And it is lighter, more power efficient.
I see. So could you walk me through this machine?
So we have interesting, for our drivetrain, we have four motors going to four very interesting looking wheels. And so these wheels are mostly hollow, kind of framed looking things. But on the outside of them, it kind of looks like they're covered in wine corks of a sort at a 45 degree angle to the rotational axis, I believe is the word. Is that correct, Austin?
Yeah.
Of the wheel. And so there are little rollers on the edge of the wheel. And so that means that when we push our joystick to the left, the robot can respond by spinning some of its wheels forwards and some of its wheels backwards, including on the same side of the robot. And the forward and backward forces cancel, and it generates a net sideways force, which basically means that no matter which way our robot is facing, we can go any direction.
All right, so that's the wheels. And in these boxes here on the side,
this is where
that
we
are marked with all sorts of stickers.
Yes,
are these your sponsors?
These are our sponsors.
Wow, how many sponsors do you have here?
Yeah, we have way too many to count, and it is a good thing. So we have, for example, we have Atlas Technologies, Peninsula Sportsman, Tree Frog Woods, Titusville, Alba Creative, Bezos Family Foundation, Mean Bean, etc. Thank you all to those guys. And so then behind that plate of wonderful sponsors, we have our hidden little black box of fun. And it's just loaded with motor controllers and a power distribution board and a main breaker switch and the robo reel. And I would take that plate off, but I'm worried I wouldn't be able to get it back on because it kind of looks like a crazy V8 back there.
That's okay. It looked like we'd get electrocuted if we like messed around in there too much. And so on the other side,
and then
same.
On the opposite side, mirroring that, we have two, I'd say about 8-inch long air tanks, about maybe an inch and a half to 2 inches in diameter.
Is there a compressor on board as well?
Yes, we also have a compressor located just below them with a pressure switch, emergency release valve right here, and gauges.
And so this compressed air is to operate, I would guess, this pneumatic arm.
Yes, we actually have, inside of the robot, we have a tall frame that goes up, 6'5.5", which is a half inch below our maximum height that our robots are allowed to be this year. And then on that frame rides a little, kind of almost like an elevator, only it doesn't have a floor. Instead, it has little extendable appendages of a sort. And what happens is we have our game this year is we have storage totes. And what we are supposed to do is pick them up, stack them, put a garbage can on top, and then put them on top of a small white platform. And that is how we score points. And our goal is to score as many points as possible.
So to stack as many boxes
as... Yes, hence the name Mad Stacks. And so then we have this crazy pincher arm that we have on the back. We call it the universal rear lifter, or as I jokingly call it sometimes when we don't have it tuned correctly, the death claw. Because it has four pistons on this thing, and it is pneumatically actuated. And they are running at a running pressure of 60 PSI, I believe. And that means it generates around 240 pounds of force. If we really want it to, which is a little bit terrifying if you think about it. Right now I'm putting on the loading mechanism, which we use. They're basically little aluminum 1-inch by 1-inch rods that are attached to a bracing arm, a pneumatically actuated piston arm, and then motors and sticky, really, really, really sticky wheels. And so what we have is we have them on the front of our robot, and we put this here, and we hook it up to our pneumatics. And so the way it works is we give this stuff air pressure, either one way or the other, and it either pulls these two arms apart, which means they are not making contact with any tote we have in front of us, or it pinches them together as far as they can go until they make contact with the main frame and stop. And we have these totes out here, and this is all plumbed up with pneumatics. And what happens is we drive forward and these little wheels that we have on the intake arms clamp together on the tote and then they spin, kind of grab the tote and slurp it in. And then
what do the arms over here on the other side do then?
The arms on the other side, we typically use those to grab totes if we need, And we can also use them to pick up this 30-gallon garbage can that we have. And right now it is full of our mascot, which is a giant orange felt octopus.
Giant what? Orange octopus?
A giant felt orange octopus that generates static electricity like crazy, especially in eastern Washington. I found out the hard way.
Shocking is for sure.
You don't want to be trying to dance in that thing when you're trying to hype up the crowd, because your face will be electrocuted.
Well, so are we gonna fire this thing up?
Are we allowed to, Austin?
I think so.
Okay. Let me finish plumbing this and wiring these things.
You need a battery.
And I guess we'll fire this sucker up.
We'll definitely need a battery.
Now, are any of you familiar with the, I don't know if it's still on the air, but there's this English program that was called Robot Wars?
Yes. A lot of us grew up with that.
I'd hesitate to call it an inspiration, because that might imply some sort of liability, but yes.
It's the first question most people get when talking about robotics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you guys build BattleBots?
Do you know about Robot Wars?
Yeah, it's, if you say, oh, I'm on a robotics team, somebody will immediately say, oh, like BattleBots?
Yeah.
First thing, every time.
Right. It's considered very bad form to destroy your opponent's robot.
And so, often causes problems with the judges. They don't really like it when you destroy other teams' robots.
Oh, really? So that might get you a few demerits or something, like, you know.
This year's game in particular has very, very limited interaction with the other side's robot because there's a sizable barrier in between the field. However, previous years' games have not shied away from robot-on-robot contact. In fact, many years you'll see specific rules about how to construct bumpers that go around the outside of your robot, which usually involves plywood, pool noodles, and some sort of a heavy cloth to wrap around it. So you'll get robots that are specifically built to push other robots around and prevent them from scoring. That was not the case this year, but it's very likely that we will return to it in the future.
So they have had problems where really there is a form of combat between
them. Well, I hesitate to say combat. There are certainly some years that are very, very heavy on robot-on-robot contact, and certainly obstructing your opponent's ability to score in many years has been an extraordinarily important role, particularly for teams that don't necessarily have the resources to build world-class mechanisms. If they can build a strong enough drivetrain and they have their wits about them, they can present themselves as a serious obstacle to high-scoring teams.
For example, this year's mechanic of preventing the other team from scoring, just looking at years gone past, it seems like they've always had at least some way to slow down the other team's scoring method. And this year, it's the pool noodles.
Now, pool noodles, I mean, just for those of us who may never have been around a pool, is...
They're just kind of wobbly foam cylinders, about maybe 4 feet long, I'd guess. And so not only are we allowed to put them in the garbage cans, we're also allowed to, if we really feel like it, take them and huck them at the other team's side. And so we're allowed to throw noodles onto their side of the field. I mean, within reason, and we do have to follow certain rules, but we're still allowed to do it. And so that means that if we can get a nice tight spiral on that sucker, we can easily just thread the needle and just nail it right in between the robot's wheels, and the robot will get penalized if they destroy the noodle, but they won't be able to score any points if they don't destroy the noodle by driving over it. And it basically terminates any and all possible point scoring for that team.
And the opposing teams are allowed to manually chuck these into the playing area?
We have the driver, the operator, the strategist, and the human player. And those are the four components of the drive team. And so the driver controls the robot's movements. Operator controls functions on the robot. For example, our driver, Gannon, he controls movement and, I believe, intaking.
Yeah.
And then our operator, Tate, controls elevator and the rear lifter. And then we have our strategist. I can't remember if that was Sam or Spencer. They kind of were joint at the hip.
Human player.
And so the strategist kind of sits back and talks strategy with the other strategist and says, all right, your robot does this while we do this for maximum point scoring. And then the human player can either put totes on the field through this little chute, put noodles through a little hole in the wall into friendly robots' their garbage cans, or they can choose to take the noodles and throw them over our protective wall that our drivers stand behind so they don't get nailed by a robot. And they can just throw it over that wall at the other team's field, which is...
There is one penalty, though, associated with pool noodles, other than if you, like, completely destroy one. If you throw one after the last 20 seconds of the match, then you get penalized.
Yes. So that is nice. It means that if you are going for a last-minute play, there aren't going to be any new pool noodles entering your side of the field from nowhere. And so, but as I was saying before, we had the garbage can. We're going in to finish off our stack with the garbage can on top. And this noodle is kind of just sitting there between us and our stack, kind of going, "Hi, how you doing?" And so our driver doesn't see it, and we have our wheels. They aren't exactly the smoothest wheels, and so they're a little bit choppy because they have the individual rollers. And so he gets right up to it, and the noodle kind of tries to wedge itself between some of the rollers. So the robot just kind of stops. And so he just kind of goes, "Eh." And we're just trying to creep over it, and then all of a sudden the noodle just goes, "Wee!" And just goes flying backwards out from under the robot. And the robot goes, "Whoop!" and hops forward just a little bit because it suddenly has traction again. And the elevator hadn't reached its maximum height, and the bottom of our garbage can clipped our totes, like the top of its tote stack, and then everything fell over, and we lost points.
Disaster.
We were fairly convinced that had we scored that stack, we would have stood a very good chance of winning that particular event. But as a consequence of hitting that stack, we finished with a semifinal finish.
Alrighty, Austin, you want to help me set this up?
So let me turn it on. And we'll fire up the driver station software. Okay.
This right here is our control setup. And so we have a little readout that shows our gyroscope's current reading. We have little graphs that show the current readout from our joysticks. And then we also have basically a big green button for enabling and a big red button for disabling the robot. Which means if thing goes wrong, you push the red button. So let's turn this on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sounds like a robot.
Yeah, go ahead and hit disable. Do you want to talk about the software that controls the lift?
Oh, would I ever? If I take you back to this rear end of our robot, where we have our main lifting assembly for controlling the elevator's height and stuff, if you crouch down here, you see underneath, we have a small little motor that goes through a couple gearboxes. So I believe it is a 75-to-1 ratio at this point, which makes it able to lift more.
Makes it strong.
Yes. And so then we have it going from that onto a sprocket on a shaft that then goes to our chain, which we have attached to the elevation frame. And then on the other end of that shaft, past the sprocket, we have a little encoder. And so we use this rather quirky little bit of code. And so it is called PID.
Which stands for?
Proportional Integral Derivative. We watched a video about it on YouTube, actually. The robot is able to determines the position of the loader by knowing where it isn't, but where it could be, and also where it shouldn't be. And so then from there, it removes the... Oh, hey, we have more members.
Hi. How you doing? Good to see you.
So this is Sam.
So I heard you were in this club, and I was wondering if I would see you here today.
Well, yeah, we were just at fundraising.
Other team members had started arriving one by one, and at this moment, just as I was finally about to get a demonstration of Max Stacks in action, two more arrived, including Sam Jasper, whom I had known since he was quite young, and Rose Ritter, fresh from a fundraising foray.
Lewis.
Well, we were just talking about what this is going to cost.
We still need $5,000.
Right now we have $2,000 from that.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
My name is Rose Ritter, and right now we have $2,000, like, after after we paid for the regional competition. Nice. So that was to fund our regional competition, and now we have $2,000 left to reduce our costs for the world championship, but that still leaves $15,000.
I'm sorry, how much?
$15,000.
$15,000, that's a lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah. So when is that?
That's April 22nd to 25th.
Oh, so it's coming right up.
Yes, it's very soon. We have 11 days, and I was looking at the countdown on first this morning. So we do not have very much time, but we also aren't, it's kind of built not to give us very much time. The regional competition was only last weekend, and we received notification less than 48 hours ago that we were invited to this world championship.
I see. So what's the fundraising strategy now?
The fundraising strategy is ask everyone you know, do you want to donate? and ask everyone you don't know.
And if listeners to KPTZ want to donate, I mean, how do they contact you?
Well, they can contact our team mentor, Austin Henry, or me personally.
You'll take money.
Oh, of course. I'll always take money. No, but they can contact the team mentor, Austin Henry, at 360-775-0147 or email austinh@054@gmail.com. But they can also mail donations to the Maritime Center, Northwest Maritime Center, 431 Water Street. Those donations are tax deductible by request.
So you are a nonprofit team.
Yes, and the Maritime Center is also a nonprofit team. To get that number, once you've donated, you just call them and they'll give it to you.
Write something in the memo about robotics or something.
Well,
right?
We're recommending that people write robotics team 4918 and then care of Maritime Center, the Northwest Maritime Center, and also in the memo line. Specify the robotics team. I believe we'll also potentially be starting another Indiegogo campaign. However, we'd prefer that donations come to the Maritime Center.
Because that way you don't have to give a commission.
Exactly.
All right, so we were about to have a demonstration of this machine, and then you guys walked in. And...
All righty. Sam, you're going to come over and be my co-pilot?
I will, one moment, as soon as I get safety glasses.
Oh, I get it.
Alright.
You drive forward a bit?
It's all the way down.
Oh, is it?
There's a red light blinking up at the top. The arms are lifting and then gradually going down, and the robot is slowly advancing on a tub. I managed to spin the tub around.
That's right. You have to rotate.
Now, it's permissible in competition to shove the tub in with your leg. Although tethered by a 5-foot cord instead of being radio controlled as it would be in competition, Max Stacks managed to successfully stack two totes and lift a garbage can for my edification. Which led me to my final question. How long do you think it would take to make this into that device I dream of that can drag the recycling bins out from underneath the bench on my front porch, carry them down 10 steps, and then roll them about an eighth of a mile up to the top of the driveway and deposit them at the curb on Friday mornings.
Well, we need this.
And then come back down the driveway and grab the garbage can and take it up and stick it there next to them.
We need to take off the McCann wheels for sure. those would get wrecked.
Yeah, but otherwise, I think we could make a prototype doll or prototype version for about $20,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're up. Yeah, I mean, for $20,000, we will give whoever donates that this robot after the competition.
This robot won't quite do it. I mean, I can see this.
Well, no, but for an additional donation, we would definitely be able to make alterations and enhance it for everyday purposes. We could even potentially add an autonomous mode so that you wouldn't even have to control it all that direction.
Well, no, that would absolutely be it. Because I don't want to have to get out of bed on Friday morning. I want the robot to just say, oh, well, it's 7 in the morning, time
exactly.
to go and do the
for
recycling.
Maybe 30,000, we could do that.
Where do you think?
We could work out a deal for that.
In the Maritime Center with First Robotics Competition Team 4918, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., Wednesdays at 10 a.m., and Saturdays at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.